Welcome to Serial Sisters, a podcast where my sister and I tell each other true crime stories. I'm Devana.
And I'm Kristen.
And this week, Kristen has a story for me.
Okay, so, disclaimer. It has been just a hellish couple weeks. There's been so much going on. So, this one is actually a story that I've already told Devana, but we were having technical issues, so we never managed to get it edited and posted, so... Devana's heard this one, but everyone else hasn't, so we're going to do it again anyways.
Which, most of the technical difficulties are on my end most of the time.
I had one that my computer ate. There was one that was my fault.
That's true. We're equal in mess-ups.
We are equal. It's true. So, hopefully, this one goes through, because I do really enjoy this story, because it's so fucked up. So, that's why we're doing it again, because it's a good one. So... this one is Omaima Ari Nelson. And all of this info, it came from Murderpedia and from Ranker. And I watched a documentary on YouTube on the channel Female Killers. And I first heard about it in a book called True Crime Stories Volume 3 by Ryan Becker.
Okay.
So, Omaima was born in Egypt in 1968. And as a child, she was given a female circumcision, which mutilated her genitals and made sex painful for her. She was also molested as a child by at least two men.
Oh, so that's like a fun start.
I know. Always a good start. In 1986, when she was 18, Omaima immigrated to the U.S. and she lived in Southern California. The YouTube documentary was pretty, like, tilted towards, oh my god, she's the worst, she's the most evil woman ever. And, like, of the course. True Crime Stories Volume 3 was definitely tilted more towards, oh, there was something wrong with her. It wasn't all her fault. So, she's somewhere in the middle. Uh-huh. So, in the YouTube documentary, it said that she had a pattern of picking up men in bars, tying them up, and robbing them. But it didn't read anything else about that. She had one ex that had reported her for that, so.
Okay.
So, Omaima had dated a man named Robert Hansen, who, according to Becker's book, wanted to engage in bondage with her, although that's the only thing that said that it was his idea.
Uh-huh.
And then, in November of 1980, she had tied him up, pulled a gun on him, and demanded money, which they broke up after that. Makes sense.
Well, yeah, you would break up.
Yeah, I generally don't date people after they pull guns on me. That's usually where I draw the line.
Generally.
I mean, maybe one time it didn't, but after that, that was it.
It, like, depends on how much they, like, cook me dinner and, like, do nice things for me.
Yeah, right? Oh, that was a really, really good dinner. I really enjoyed it, so I'm going to let the gun thing slide. It's okay.
It might just fly a little bit, yeah.
In October of 1991, Omaima met 56-year-old William Nelson at a bar in Costa Mesa where he was playing pool. She was 23 at the time. William was a pilot and a convicted drug smuggler. When they met, he was still on parole from conviction in 1984 from Texas. In 1990, while he was in Lompoc Federal Prison serving his sentence, his wife at the time filed for divorce. The divorce was still pending when he met Omaima. And William was a big dude. He was 6'4", and he was over 220 pounds, while Omaima was like your height, and she was just over 5 feet tall.
A little. See? Yeah, tiny.
So they had met.
I'd be afraid they'd crush me.
What?
Like, I'm too small.
I know. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Well, especially because over 220 pounds. So not just that he's tall, he's also solid. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, roll over and you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-uh.
Don't get him drunk. Starts moving around in his sleep, you're screwed. So they had met in October, and then by November, they were married. Although, technically, when they got married, William was still married to his first wife. Yeah. Bigamy. It's a thing. After they were married, they went to the Midwest on a honeymoon to meet his family, which is where Omaima says that he started to get abusive. He assaulted her several times, and he raped her. He expected her to participate in bondage, and he wanted her to tie him up. She says she tried to leave him at one point, but he beat her, and then she was too afraid to leave.
Okay.
So then, on Thanksgiving Day, after they had been married for about 3 weeks, William assaulted her again. Later, they were driving in his red Corvette and having an argument, and he threw her kitten out of the window while he was driving.
Oh, I don't like that.
I know.
That's the worst.
Dick. Yeah. Poor kitten. Wasn't the kitten's fault. Yeah. All right. So this is where the story gets a little bit different, depending on where you're reading and whether they're on Omaima's side or on William's side. So, from Murderpedia, when they got back to the apartment, William began sexually assaulting her, and then she stabbed him with a pair of scissors and beat him with a clothes iron. But from Becker's book, he said when they got back to the apartment, Omaima pretended that she was interested in having sex with William, and she tied him up. And then she hit him with the clothes iron, yelling and cursing the whole time. And then she stabbed him repeatedly with a pair of scissors. So, either way, she beat him with the iron and stabbed him with the scissors. It's just whether...
The circumstance, yeah.
What happened before that. Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
That's a lot. And, I mean, it's fairly light. I could understand it'd be... easy to beat someone with, but it's also like it's metal. Yeah. It's gotta hurt.
I don't know. It's like
light
but hefty. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh huh.
Yeah.
It's solid.
It's not like a spatula. Yeah.
Mm hmm. Oh no, I kind of want to beat someone with a spatula. Like,
a spatula is light. Yeah.
Yeah. So after she had killed him, Omaima had to figure out what to do with the body, and since she was so much smaller than him. So she went to the kitchen, she got a large knife and a cleaver, and she started to dismember his body. I know. What else was she going to do? She literally could not pick him up and carry him. I know. So she took his head, and she boiled it in a pot on the stove, and then she placed it in the freezer after it was cooked.
Why?
She took his hands and she cooked them in...
Why cook it?
What? I know. I don't know. I have an explanation for why she did this.
You're gonna freeze it. Like, why cook it? Okay, sorry.
I don't eat meat. I don't have an answer for that. Would you cook something before you freezed it?
Fucking freeze it.
Okay.
You weirdo.
Okay. Okay, I don't know this.
Sorry.
So she took his hands and she cooked them in oil to burn away his fingerprints. She cut off his genitals as revenge for his abuse, and then she put them down the garbage disposal. Mm-hmm. Since there was still a lot of William left, she began to put other parts of him down the garbage disposal as well. Pretty much whatever she could fit down there.
Bad plan.
I know. Her neighbors later told the cops that they had heard the garbage disposal running almost nonstop for a couple days because it was over Thanksgiving weekend. So other parts of him that wouldn't go down the disposal went into like suitcases and garbage bags. And then she tried to put leftovers from Thanksgiving in the garbage bags as well, hoping that people would look at the garbage bags and see turkey and think that her husband's body was leftover turkey as well.
Totally the same. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
It's all cool. Meat.
I wouldn't, see a fucking, gross foot or something.
That turkey had a foot. That's
it's
weird.
A turkey.
It's a new mutation.
It's free range. Oh, my God. Okay.
This is getting bad.
That's just so crazy.
Someone's going to get mad at us for this one.
Hey, they signed up for this.
It's true. So, according to a psychiatrist that saw Omaima before her trial, she told the psychiatrist that she had put on a red hat, red shoes, and red lipstick, and then cooked William's ribs and ate them, saying that they were just like the ribs that she ate at a restaurant. But she later denied ever having said this, so... It's the psychiatrist's word against hers.
So that may just be sensationalist. Yeah.
Yeah. So she might have ate him. We don't know. So after all that, though, there was still a lot of William left, and she didn't know what to do with his body. He's a big dude. There's a lot of him. You don't think about it, but 220 pounds of him.
That's a lot of dude.
That's a lot of body to get rid of. You can only shove so much down the garbage disposal. So yeah, okay. There was a lot of him left. So on December 2nd, she went to her ex-boyfriend's house to help her get rid of the body. She offered him $75,000 to help. He told her to go back to the apartment and that he'd come help her, but he instead called the police. He went, okay, crazy lady, you got it. I'm totally on my way. Yeah. Go home and wait for me. He's like, fuck, and then called the cops. Good job. I know. Good job. The documentary on YouTube says that she was arrested in his Corvette with pieces of him in the car with her. Yeah.
It's just like, I'm guilty.
So on February 20th, right? You just have body parts in the car with you. Like I said, the documentary was one of the ones that was like, she's the worst. Yeah. She's evil. So yeah. I don't know if it's true or not. I don't know. Because that, I don't, I mean, she's obviously kind of crazy. But I don't know if you would still have a hand in the front seat, like, next to you.
You might just be like, let's put that in the trunk. That just seems stupid.
I know.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Misogyny. Patriarchy. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit of racism. Exactly. She's Egyptian. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So on February 21st, 1992, Omima pleaded not guilty to murdering her husband. The defense claims that she was acting in self-defense as William was assaulting her at the time of the murder, but there are ligature marks on his ankles suggesting that he had been tied up at the time of his death. So the jury trial began in December of 1992. The jury deliberated for 6 days after closing arguments, then came back with a verdict on January 12th, 1992. Nope, that's got to be 93. Because that's how time works.
Move forward.
The jury deliberated for 6 days after closing arguments, then came back with a verdict of, on January 12, 1993, of guilty of second-degree murder, because there wasn't enough evidence to show premeditation, and they also found her guilty of assaulting Robert Hansen, although they acquitted her of false imprisonment and attempted robbery. So she was sentenced to 27 years to life in prison, and she was sent to the Central California Women's Facility in Chowchilla, California. She appealed in 1995, and she lost. She was eligible for parole in 2006, and she said that she had found salvation as a born-again Christian. And while she had been in prison...
No, well, they always do.
Yeah, I know. Everyone finds Jesus in prison, except for Marilyn Manson. No, he never did.
But
he was too busy thinking that he was Jesus to find him, probably. There's another crazy person. We're never going to cover him on this podcast. No. There is way too much.
There is way too much. We'll never do it as well as them, whoever they are.
I know. Exactly. Everyone else that does podcasts. So she was eligible for parole in 2006 and claimed that she had found salvation as a born-again Christian and she had married an older man, but she was denied because, quote, commissioners found her unpredictable and a serious threat to public safety.
Yeah.
Which, good call. I mean, you cut up one husband, that's probably about it. So she was up for parole again in 2011 and she claimed that she could be trusted because her current husband, the older man that she had married already, had had multiple conjugal visits for 3 days at a time where there were knives in the kitchen and the dude had never feared for his life. So she's clearly all better. Her husband has died since then, since she was up for parole in 2011. Like, they had had the conjugal visits. He died. She was up for parole. And he had left her a shit ton of money. So she kind of wanted that money because you can't get it when you're in prison. They won't let you have it. So William's daughter read a letter to the parole board telling them how upsetting it was that her father had never walked her down the aisle and that her never get to meet his granddaughter. So then Omima was, again, denied parole, partly because she shows no remorse for her crime and she still blames the victims for what happened, and partly because the parole board said that she shows no interest in bettering herself while in prison and that she's taken no part in any of the programs available to her. So. She won't be available for parole again until 2026. So that's where we're at.
Wait.
20. And now all of her new husband's money is just sitting there in the bank and she can't get to it.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, my cat is sniffing the mic. Get out of here, cat. Go away. God damn it. Man, wait. 2026? Oh my
yeah,
gosh.
Yeah, so six more years.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because, I mean, think about the math. She did this in, what, 91? Yeah, late 91. She was 23 at the time, so it's been a few years, but she's still not that old. Hold on, I need a calculator to do math because I can't do it in my head. And
I'm too drunk to do math in my head.
It's true.
Not that I could when I'm sober, so...
Okay, so it's been 27 years since he was since 91. God, it's been 27 That's years nice. Since 91. So yeah, she's still only 50.
That's like not very. Yeah.
Right now.
Not at all.
That's not that old. Yeah.
Man, yeah, that's a good one. I always like that one.
Mm-hmm. I know. Because it's just crazy to imagine shoving someone down the garbage disposal.
Yeah, like,
it's just nuts.
Think, like, overthink.
I know.
Woman, you would be like, that's odd as a neighbor. Like, you know, like.
Yeah.
We.
Well, but I mean, as a neighbor, number one, how many of your neighbors are there and how many of them have actually just gone out of town? So it might be the quietest time.
It's. I mean, we both live in, like, pretty big apartment complexes, and I feel like I would know if one of my if that was abnormal for one of my neighbors.
But how much would you think about it over Thanksgiving? Because it was just her and her husband. Nobody else was there. Of course they had leftovers. Why wouldn't she put some down the
garbage
disposal?
But all fucking night? I don't know. Like, that would be the part where I'm like, this has been going on for, like, a while.
Yeah. But what are you going to do? Call the cops and be like, my neighbor's been running her garbage disposal all night.
No, but I feel I mean, I'm enough of a bitch to be like, dude, I can hear this. And I would, like, go knock on their door and I'm like, I'd be murdered.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I get murdered for that. Like, I know my downstairs neighbor, so I would be like, no, that's weird. What the fuck are you doing in there?
Yeah.
That's not good.
Yeah. See, if I hear, whenever, because it does happen, I hear Ian next door doing weird stuff, I don't knock on the door.
Well, no, because I know him.
Yeah. Because he's crazy and a psycho.
But, like, I feel like most, my neighbors are semi-normal, and I still don't know them that well, but, like, I would be like, what the fuck? Oh, I don't know. Garbage disposal all night. That gets me.
I don't know.
Thanks for listening. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Serial Sisters and at email serialsisters@outlook.com.